Why do you say it's slavery?
Why do I say that prison is slavery? Well, you got to think about it. It's right there in your Constitution in black and white. You familiar with the 13th Amendment? Neither slavery, nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, shall exist within the United States. It says except as a punishment for crime. So that word except changes the whole narrative. So when they say except for a punishment for crime shall exist, and it says whereas the party shall have been duly convicted, and that's just basically saying that if you commit a crime, the state has the right to take away your freedom. And I'm going to show you why that's true. I was pardoned for my charge. At the age of 16, I had got an armed robbery. I did 10 years, sir. 20 served 10.
Were you convicted as an adult? Or
I was charged as an adult.
16 years old.
At 16 years old, which is completely crazy to me because you can...
Because you're 18.
You can sentence a 16-year-old to a life sentence or to however much time to be served with adults. But when it comes down to, like, other charges like buying cigarettes or liquor, oh no, that's bad. You know, you get what I'm saying? So to me, it's kind of like...
Well, yeah, but weirdly, legally, you're defined as an adult at 18, voting, you know.
But it depends, that in America, it depends on the circumstance. They can always bend the law, change the law. But with the 13th Amendment, when I got my pardon, it said that all civil disabilities are restored. So civil disabilities, that means that civil is your rights. You get what I'm saying?
Felons can't vote in Georgia.
Yeah, they can't. It depends on what you charge with. But when they say all civil disabilities are restored, they basically just prove that when you commit a crime, they de-citizenize you. That's why when you get out, you can't get a certain job, or you can't go work for a police force or a government entity or anything because of status of your conviction.
Or vote to change the
law. So yeah. That's kind of like a...
Well, there's also with the slavery, there's also the aspect of population of Columbus is 50-50 black, white, give or take. Prison population is probably 85% black.
Yeah,
Columbus.
Columbus got a long history of doing the minorities wrong. If you can't afford a lawyer, then you're going to get punished to the full extent of the law.
There's a guy from France 300 years ago said the justice system is a spider web. The big flies go right through it. Little flies get caught.
Yeah, little fly, and we are the little flies.
So, people without money.
Yeah, but see, the sad thing is that. Why would you sit back knowing that you have a system that's broken and allow people's lives to be affected? You get what I'm saying? When I went to prison, I was 16.
Where'd you go to jail? What would you like to
have? I first went to Chautauqua Road, then I went to the county jail because my grandma passed, and they wouldn't let me go to her funeral, so I spazzed out. And they sent me to the county jail. And when I went to the county jail, I was there, they put me in there with a grown man in the cell. And that's how I got my GED, actually. He had two GED prep books. And after a couple of months, they separated us. But I bought the two books for like two packs of cookies. And I studied the books. I didn't know math like that, but I studied all the formulas in the back and everything. When I got to prison, I got my GED through that, you know, because I was able. But
where were you in school at the time when you got arrested?
I was going to... The last school I remember attending was Baker Middle School. That's when, that was a long time ago.
How old are you now?
I'm 37.
Okay.
And I've been out, well, what is it, 2019?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been home 11 years, and I got a pardon from the state. I get my gun rights back next month. But, man, you got to think about it. The prisons, they're making so much money, man. And I did a presentation a while back, modern day slavery. A lot of people don't understand it that nobody will say that slaves exist. That sounds so inhumane, human trafficking and all that. But if you say that that person's a criminal, The narrative changes. You deserve what you get if I call you a criminal.
Criminal is defined by who, too?
Yes, it's defined by the state people, yeah. the powers that be, because they know that if you change the perspective of how people look at situations and people, then they won't think twice about they deserve to eat that while they're locked up.
Yeah.
Or they deserve this treatment. And when the fact of the matter is, nobody deserves that because we're not God. Like, we can't pronounce judgment on people like that.
Yeah. And there's also wrongful convictions. There's a million things to say about
that.
Oh,
man, you got some.
Yeah, but there's, So who did you give that presentation to?
I did it at the military library.
When was that?
What is this? I think that was in 2016 or 17 when I did that presentation. And I think I still got the slides on one of my hard drives, but what I was trying to show people was that, you know, slavery is still exercised. And see, the whole thing about slavery was money. Of course, you know that. It was money.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that never had to go into a recession. Making money off of...
Yeah, free labor.
Free labor. Yeah. You never seen a lapse in the employment with that because you had a plethora of employees.
Yeah.
Prisoners, and a lot of people don't know that. Before the Civil War, which ended right here, Alabama, Columbus, Georgia line, President Andrew Johnson, I think, who preceded Abraham after he got assassinated, he was a Southerner. He wanted to keep slavery. He went and offered pardons to all the white prisoners if they was to fight to keep slavery here. So when he pardoned them as a result of fighting in the civil process of keeping slavery, as soon as that happened, and then you had the laws come out, the prison population turned from like 90-some% white to 90-some% black.
And it started providing them labor on the trash pickup.
Exactly. So now,
the other cities after slavery ended, they had to start importing Chinese and Italians.
Oh, man. See,
it's just somebody else to rip off.
And it's saddening because at the end of the day, you got to do right by your people. Man. That's the biggest integrity you can have as a council member, as somebody that's in a position to help. Do right by the people. I go to the county jail. I talk to a lot of guys out here in the streets. And it's like, so much stuff is trumped up on them. They can't get jobs, man.
I was unlucky enough to go get through the system once, and there's a kid in front of me who's getting booked, and he had no money for an attorney. He's representing himself, and his charges, which I was like, any lawyer would rip right through these charges. They're all bullshit. But at 19, his rap sheet was so long. His bond was like $800,000. You know what I'm saying? And so he's gonna sit in jail for a year. Not necessarily convicted.
Yeah, it's just
city. So what do you do to, like, mentor people?
Well, I create a platform based on what I've been through. I use it as a means to break the ice with a lot of people because a lot of people in the streets, they really don't want to hear you if you don't have nothing to kind of, no neutral ground to really identify with them with. A lot of people respect me. I guess because I take integrity, you know, I have integrity in what I do, and I share my story with people, and I give them the processes to make it. Like, how do you get a job being an ex-offender? I tell them that being persistent, you know, your appearance, your dialogue, how you talk. Don't go on and say, "Hey, I'm looking for a job, man. What's up? You hiring?"
Yeah.
No. They, even if it's a mediocre job. Sell yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Never say, "Why do you want a job? Because I need money."
Yeah, because I need money. I want a job because I have a livelihood. I have a family. It's just the way the language is.
Yeah.
And once I learned those things as a result of going through them, I started sharing those stories and helping people with them. You get what I'm saying? Like the probation office. When people get out, you need identification.
I know people that go to jail for not being able to pay their probation. Like, this guy's trying to get back on his feet. You're charging him $2,000 a year to be on probation.
That's another thing.
That's crazy.
The state.
How are you supposed to establish yourself when you're owing that much money? It's hard to work.
They do that. They create a means in which you're gonna fall because the state has already allocated funds to be correction officers, probation officers, or whatever. These extra funds, like, who is it going to?
Yeah, but they also consolidated all that. Probation and parole is the same now, and it's now under community services, which is also the people that are responsible for, like, making parks in your neighborhood. Like, it's totally just... So do you have, like, a formal name for what you do? Like, your presentation, or do you just go to the jail?
Bridge the Gap.
Bridge the Gap?
Bridge the Gap,
and
yeah.
And you go to the prison under the Muskogee
County? I go to there when I have time, and right now, I haven't been in a short while because of...
Do they allow you just to go in there and talk to, like, a...
Yeah, every Sunday, I'm on the minister's list. Yeah, I was on probation at the time, and Pop Barnes basically called down there.
Cool.
They talked to Neil and Sheriff Dart at the time, told Neil, hey, you interviewing me. If you think you're good. I talked to Neil for like 2 minutes, and he was like, hey, man, you grew up with me. I like your spirit. Because I've always been a straight-up guy, man.
He's
you
a
know?
Good man.
Yeah, Neil Richardson is good, and he does a lot to help those people.
Because he knows he's been through it.
Yeah, he has been through the ringer. And I've been trying to propose, like, in that kind of jail, let the guys come out for an hour a day. We have to. When you start treating people and thinking that they're savages, then that's how you're going to handle them.
But the people in the jail haven't even been locked up. I mean, convicted them.
that's the thing. You're innocent until proven guilty. But here it is. You take a picture. They put you in a joint. Promote you, publicize you. Then all of a sudden, if you're not guilty, your job done seen it by now, somebody, you still suffer the consequences. I personally think they should put your picture in there until after you've been convicted or something.
Well, these fucking cases like the joint should be sued. Another thing too that makes me mad is, like, all right, so if you have money for bail or bond and you're going back to court and you're in a coat and tie, you're going to look a lot different than if you walked in cuffs and wearing the blue.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? You're going to look a lot different.
Yeah, you're going to look a whole lot different. I'm going to tell you something. All these people are in cahoots. I was sitting in court, and they were just laughing and kicking the DA and the public defender. And I'm looking like, who's on whose side here? Like, everybody seems to just be cool. And then all of a sudden, all right, we all cool. And I mean, we all about business. And I'm like, something ain't right about this, you know what I'm saying? And I don't like the system, because I've been a part of it, and I know how crooked the system really is.
The thing is, all right, so even if people did defend the system as it is now, it doesn't reduce crime.
And that's the thing.
Like, it doesn't
work. They're selling the idea, and people are buying that. People are buying the concept that, oh, if we do this, it's going to reduce.
No, are not less violent.
I'm going to tell you what's going to reduce crime. When they start putting these police officers on the south side, on Western Road, put them out there.
Yeah, and stand there and stand on the street corner without a gun and talk to people.
Yes, talk to people.
Like in London, the cops don't carry guns unless they're like the serious cops.
Yeah. They
don't stand on the street
and
corner.
And their crime rate is lower than
now. If you're really trying to fight crime, you start knowing the neighbors, they'll tell you something who's shady and who's doing this.
Yeah, you got it.
Old ladies will always take care of the neighborhood if they trust the cop.
We had an event called Kenny Day 2 weeks ago in Elizabeth Cannon Apartments.
Kenneth
Washington. He was a guy got shot like 2 years ago, the day before Father's Day, on Casita Road. And he's my cousin. And so I went through the police department. On their application, it says if you have 10,000 people, you need insurance. And if you're going to have to block roads, you need police. On the application. They made us get all that stuff anyway, and we didn't need to block no roads, and we didn't have 10,000 people. And I asked the lady, why are you changing the rules? She's like, well, the chief said he's not going to sign, Ricky Gore. He's not going to sign unless you do this. And I'm like, so basically y'all making us pay for this event, basically. Because constitutionally, we have the right to assemble. Right?
Right.
But on a state level, they said, okay, we can't stop your right to assemble, but if you do, you need to notify us. You need to have insurance. You need to have officer escort. It's like, what if we can't afford that?
Yeah,
because
that's hundreds, if not $1,000.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's not our problem, sir. It's just the rules. You all knew you was making these rules and what they was going to do when you made them. You get what I'm saying? And that's the genius. And it is genius to think of something like that, to disable the efforts of somebody trying to do something positive.
What kind of reaction did you get from people when you gave the prison slavery talk in the military?
a lot of people was real receptive because the way that I always try to use an analogy, like my situation, and to answer your question, they was real receptive because an analogy kind of, it to me, it sets them up and it conditions them to receive the message, right? So I said, hey, take a man that's 35 years old, got a newborn daughter and son, beautiful wife, man kicks the door down, shoots the baby, shoots the wife, husband left to survive, but he couldn't protect his home because of a charge he had when he was 16. He couldn't have his bat right to bear arms because of something he did when he was 16 that should have not affected his life right now, or his children's life, or his wife's life.
Is that what happened to your cousin?
No, that didn't happen to my cousin. I was just using that because ultimately that's been my situation up until I get my gun rights back, my right to bear arms, because why should a decision that I made when I was 16 affect anybody else but me? Right? So is it wrong for somebody who's previously a felon to have a gun? No, it shouldn't be, because before time, when you had white people getting locked up, they was able to get out and have all the guns they wanted. But when blacks started owning guns, and when they started to be betrayed as the enemies and savages and monsters, now we need all these gun rights. Then the Constitution said you should have the right to bear arms, and that should not be infringed. But that's, again, the wordplay. You get what I'm saying? So when I use analogies, and I, the same way with the county jail, when I go in there and talk to the guy, I always like to get some kind of analogy to condition them for the message. Because in there, I bring it straight home. If you end up for killing somebody, I let them know you're wrong. You know, you might as well take the guy that you killed, daughter or son, and sit them right there and just say, F you, you don't mean nothing. Because you took their parents. I said, but now it's not time. Now it's not too late. You can go, if you're going up to prison, you can talk to these young guys that's getting out. We can still make some good out of this. So that's what I do. I try to be wise about it, you know?
Yeah, so you would say crime reduction would be better policing, better community-oriented policing?
And more peer-to-peer, too. We have to, like they talked to me, talked about gangs the other day. The news came out into the food truck. I don't know if you've seen the clip. We were talking about gangs.
Can you talk to you?
Yeah, I used to be in one when I was small. It was called Raiders. When I was little, it was just a subcategory of a gang.
Yeah.
It was more brothers, young kids trying to do something.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
You know.
I had a childhood friend who got caught up in that stuff.
See what I'm saying? Yeah. And if you're not careful, you can grow right into it. But one of the biggest things that will reduce crime, we mentioned it earlier, we have to gain trust back into our system. But when they see the system doing people wrong, pulling people over, harassing people, coming into community, breaking up innocent gathering, people might be at a basketball court having a fun time. They might smoke their little weed or something like that. Don't be a hound dog to run through the whole crowd to smell it.
It's weed.
Yeah, like it's weed. It's not a... And I'm like, but when you do stuff like that and you run the community the wrong way, they lose respect for you and they don't want to talk to you. They don't want to volunteer information that can lead to suspects that have killed somebody or something like that.
You know what I'm saying? Or them getting killed.
Yeah,
and the weird thing too is, you talk about drugs, one thing's about if you're a 13-year-old kid, it's my buddy, they call him Kojak. I don't know if you remember Kojak, he's dead now.
One guy shot in apartments in the neck, I did time, I grew up with him.
He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah,
I grew up with him too. Like, I mean, like, different side of the tracks. I don't know his real name, but the other side of the tracks, so I grew up in Overlook and he grew up on the projects over by Marshall.
Yeah.
And so we just became buddies because then we liked riding bike around and he's hiding from him. And anyway, so when you're a 13 year old kid, you're kind of going through life, the drugs are illegal. You're 13, and you get access to gangs, and all of a sudden, there's so much money to be made. And how it's so attractive to somebody like that, because you get initiated in these things, and like, because it's illegal, the black market is controlling it, so these little gangs have access to tons of money.
Money, drugs, guns. Yeah. I see young kids with stuff all the time. They all on Facebook with it, smoking. 13, 14, 15, 16, going live with their guns.
Yeah, well, that's how those kids that got killed, that killed their family in Ubatoy, they got arrested for putting the shoes on Facebook.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, you start to get caught because you kill somebody, but you fucking dumbass.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you put your shoe, and you know, it kind of reminds you that, you know, materialism, man, just anything material, man.
That case made me so sad because that kid had such a level of hate for them because they had money.
Yeah.
And that's materialism. It makes me sad.
And that's what I tell people. You don't dangle steaks around lions, especially if they haven't eaten. That's why I tell a lot of guys that from the hood, they flash their money, showing all this stuff. But you got 3-4 guys around you that don't have what you have. You mean to tell me they won't pounce on the opportunity, especially if they can get away with it or they feel like they can, try to do something to you? That's why I try to have like-minded people around me, or I don't have them around me at all.
And that's why. And that's also the cops, especially when it's black on black crime.
They don't care.
Kojak's killer will never be caught. They didn't give a rat's ass.
Because he had a record this long, running in with the police.
They didn't give a rat's ass. They didn't care at all.
No
justice for his kids.
Yeah.
Family.
And to me, that's sad, though, because at the end of the day,
he was a person.
He was a human being. Yeah.
He was a good boy. He might have made some wrong, bad decisions, but we all did.
Yeah. He gained some weight. He was fat. He was chiller because we were.
He also got down in Florida. He got jacked. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah.
And he, I think that made him like, I think he had a head injury.
Yeah, he did. I know his brother, his younger brother. He's still around, but.
How did you get up and become a business owner?
Well, I went to culinary when I was in Costa Rica, and came home. I approached my family about opening up a food truck. They were skeptical, so finally, I worked at Golden Founder. I got hurt and got a settlement. Bought me a food trailer and opened twice, closed it down because I was a newbie. I didn't know the game. I just jumped out there.
Yeah.
And then I closed down, and then I got somebody totaled my Dodge and wrecked it. They hit me. And I got another settlement, and I bought this truck, transferred all the equipment. And by that time, I had all my I's dotted and my T's crossed. So I had all the wisdom I needed, so now it's like I'm here trying to do right, trying to just live in such a way, man, that, well, I don't like working for people, but I hate Uncle Sam I'm taking all my money.
You're self-employed, but you're on boss, right?
Yeah, I'm my own boss now, so.
I know that I never worked in a food truck. I've worked plenty of service time. I know that shit's hard.
Oh, yeah, but it's worth it because you ain't got to worry about, like, boss coming through you on the phone, you gotta act a certain way. I'm my own boss and I'm happy for that.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'm in control of my own life, my own destiny.
Cool. I was hoping to get you on